Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My next guest is putting a stick in the mouth of Big Gum. Niklas Terrahe is the co-founder and CEO of Pickem, a D2C brand turning flavored toothpicks into the next global habit. With 250 million plus views, 11 million toothpicks sold, and a mission to kill plastic waste from chewing gum, Pickem isn't just a product, it's a movement. Today, we're going behind the scenes of how you build hype, scale fast, and turn tiny sticks into a big deal. Niklas, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. Super happy to catch up with you.
Thank you, Marcin, for having me. I'm excited.
Nice. Hope you like the intro.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Let me start shooting questions then. Niklas, let's go back because... we met last time, we spoke last time before Pickem even happened. How does someone get the idea to reinvent toothpicks as a lifestyle brand?
Well, I think it actually started in my very first semester at uni. I just came from like a finance job and I just applied to that university. It was my first semester and I just wanted to have some fun. And I've researched into products. Like I was very inspired by two companies. One is Liquid Death. Like many people know them, and they do canned water worth a billion. And the other one is called Dr. Squash. They do block soap. I was like, how crazy is it that like commodities like water and soap can turn into such big brands? And I was looking for a product like similar to water and soap that literally every human being knows, like from India, China. And I was thinking, toothpicks. Everyone knows what a toothpick is. Everyone like immediately identifies what it is. So maybe there's something there. And then I've like researched further and I found that there were like huge spikes in toothpick adaptation in the 80s and 70s. And like people were just using it a lifestyle product and kind of like as an oral fixation thing, just having a toothpick in their mouth. And I was like, maybe we can bring this back. Then it pretty much died because I couldn't find anyone who wanted to flavor toothpicks with me in my first semester. So 4 years later, I moved in with my roommate who also studied at the same university and he just sold his marketing agency. Shout out to Joel. And I told him about this crazy idea that we could turn toothpicks into something big. And he was like, let's just do it. Let's just set up a UG, put a bit of money in it, and let's just give it a try. And I've also founded two other co-founders from the same university. That I just said, like, hey guys, do you want to give it a try? Let's see whether people like toothpicks or not. So we set up the UG. We've invested a few thousand euros to just like, I think produce 2,000 packs. And then we just started with social media because we were like, you know, there's basically no toothpick demand to be very fair. I don't think you probably can remember the last time you actively went to a shop and bought a pack of toothpicks. Yeah. Or you probably can't also not name a single brand of toothpicks. So we were like, well, on paper, every VC would say this is a total nightmare because there's no demand. It's actually declining. And the total addressable market must be like super small. I don't know. Yeah. It's probably like in the 100 million, maybe worldwide. So we just started to do some TikToks. And I think it took us like 5 TikToks. And the 5th TikTok absolutely blew up. And like the biggest British YouTuber called KSI, he's like, I sent me some toothpicks, they're amazing. And then he tried it, he absolutely loved them. And from that moment, it absolutely kickstarted. So we were like, okay, maybe this is like a one-hit wonder thing. That's 2 years ago. And ever since, we averaged around 2 million views on every TikTok. And it's always about toothpicks. People start to like it. People pick it up as kind of like a habit. You know, everyone has this oral fixation, probably the reason why toothpicks are along for such a long time. That's how kind of like the whole thing started. And now we have actually sold 25 million toothpicks.
Nice. So I have to update my numbers.
You might have to update the number. Yeah.
Yeah. 11 million toothpicks, I said before, and it's 25 million. Come on. It's like more than double.
25 million. Yeah.
Amazing. And I love this story. This is such a good story. I think you also have to update your numbers because on the LinkedIn it says 11 millions.
Yeah, I need to probably tell.
Hey, so you're not just, but come on, you're not just selling flavor wood, right? Right? It's like you're taking on the like a 30 billion euro gum industry. Like, what's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, so I feel like if you want to, so something that we took from, like, for example, Dr. Squash or Liquid Death is you want to have an enemy, right? People want to rally behind some bigger enemy.
Yeah.
And we were like looking at chewing gum and we saw, okay, chewing gum is a market that's super unsexy. No one has really innovated in this market. There's been like five gums that has been big in 2010, but then it pretty much died. So there's nothing new in chewing gum. And it's also something like, I think in the early 2000s, it was cool to like munch on your chewing gum. Like now no one says, oh my God, he's so cool. He chews on a chewing gum. So like there might be a gap to kind of like, you know, disrupt chewing gum, but not with chewing gum, maybe with something else. So yeah, we've tried to like build this enemy of chewing gum. It's also, you know, like 90% of all chewing gum is plastic. So like most chewing gum you chew is plastic. It's the second most common litter in the world after cigarette butts. Mm. So we're like, there's something there. And like toothpicks are 100% biodegradable. It's literally just, you know, like birch wood and aroma to simplify it. So yeah, that narrative might work. And it does work, but with a bunch of other narratives as well. Yeah.
This is brilliant. I love it, actually. You know, 250 million views or 250 plus million views, 25 million toothpicks sold. What was the moment where you actually realized, you know, so, okay, this is taking off besides the fifth TikTok that you made?
I mean, so for the longest time, actually till last October, we couldn't meet the demand. I mean, it's a beautiful problem to have, but yeah. We always kept it like 30,000 euros revenue because that's how much we could produce. And then I think it was like last spring, we were like, okay, we need to kind of take this really serious. We need to figure out production. We need to do the whole back end of this thing. And yeah, like we do have quite a good idea that like people would like it, but we could never kind of like understand how many people actually want to like it because we were sold out constantly. Mm-hmm. And then I think when we finally were on stock, which was in October, that's when we had like a bunch of toothpicks on shelf. That's when we like grew 1,000% plus. I think that moment was clear. Like, yeah, okay, so people do like toothpicks.
Yeah. Hey, this is amazing. And generally, you oftentimes go viral on social media with the content you're creating about it, which is great. But how do you actually turn hype into, you know, like a long-term brand?
It's a good question. The whole social media part is done by Falk, my co-founder. So he deserves all the shout out to this.
Nice.
But we think, like, we always say that we are firstly a media company and secondly, we do flavor toothpicks. So everything we do is always through the lens of like media. So when it comes to our like online strategy, we're trying to do like a good blend of things, right? Like there have been companies like, for example, Prime Hydration, which we both see as a role model, but also kind of like as, yeah, that's maybe not how you should do it, where you blow up something to the roof. Yes, you make a bunch of money, but then you can't like settle it for a long-term like hype. So what we do is we, like if you want to create something there's no demand for, right? Like you need to have a very deliberate like tactic between you want to be entertaining, you want to like share that there is social traction around, that people actually love this, that this is not like something that we've made up that people like. So like celebrities or influencers that love the product, not just like say it because we pay them. And then like a mixture of like, you know, down to earth educational content where we just like one of our most clicked videos is where we tell the people how long a flavor lasts. It got 3 million views and we're just talking about like, oh yeah, this is how long the flavor lasts and like make it kind of like funny and witty. I think important is when you do something like flavor toothpick, which clearly doesn't cure cancer or something like that. You want to not take it too serious as well in your communication. Because if you make it like a big deal, yes, yeah, we're going to, you know, like I said earlier, we want to like disrupt chewing gum. We're not taking it from this like massively serious approach where we're like, this is a global disaster. It's a catastrophe that chewing gum is so much plastic. Because to be fair, like, you know, toothpicks is not revolutionary from first glance. So you kind of want to like, you know, slide a bit of wittiness and like fun into it as well.
100%. And speaking of that, what's one creative marketing move you tried that worked way better than expected? And how do you, and actually maybe follow-up question to that, how do you actually get Ryan Reynolds to try your toothpick on stage?
One video that was unexpected to blow up. I actually, our most clicked video is where we were shooting a toothpick into space. Like we just thought it would be a funny, entertaining TikTok to like, we attached like a chewing gum to a 2000 liter helium balloon and just send it to the stratosphere. That went crazy. I think it reached around 25 million views. And yeah, I mean, like the whole thing, it's about like building storyline, right? Like that's what you want to do. Like if you want to create demand for something that hasn't been there, or that could become back, you want to build good storyline and good storytelling. That's kind of like the core of it. But we didn't know that this would blow up so much.
Amazing. And how do you get Ryan Reynolds to try your toothpick on stage?
Well, I mean, we always like trying to be also, you know, like with all the buzz and crowd out there, with like so much advertisement around like brands, we're trying to do things a little bit different. So we're trying to do a bit of guerrilla marketing here and there because it's just also fun to do and like gets people excited. So we saw that Ryan Reynolds were at the OMR festival. I was like, well, you know, we just might give it a try to see whether he will react. So we literally just like took a piece of paper and wrote like try flavor toothpick ? And then we got a seat first row and we were holding out right into his face. And at one point in the keynote, he was like, come on guys, give me one of those toothpicks. I'm going to give it a try. We obviously like filmed it all. And he tried it. He loved it. He tried, I think, our Pleasing Peach toothpick. And he was like, oh, this is amazing. And he also like asked for our company. So that was way better than we expected it. The crazy part was, which I did absolutely not expect, was because there was so much media at the OMR festival, like Falk had done the whole stunt. He got crowded afterwards with like German media. So we got Wired on TV, like Bild, like biggest German news outlet, like wrote an article about us. That was the crazy part, which I didn't expect. And that sparked like Germany as a market, pretty much.
This is amazing, Niklas. This is so awesome. And I love it that you guys just having so much fun while doing it at the same time. So everyone talks about, you know, product market fit. What does that mean when your product is brand new to the market?
So I think like product market fit, right? Like you still need to prove that, right? Like it's not that you can always like ever skip this. But I think you don't need to, I think what a lot of founders and especially VCs do wrong is they go in the numbers, they look at like, oh, how big is the total addressable market? Like 100 million total addressable market for toothpicks declining, that's never going to kick off. But I think if you really think first principles, like for like one of our big role models is Chiquita Bananas. Like there was one guy, like American guy, who went to Papua New Guinea and he tried a banana. He was like, oh, I love this fruit. Let's make it big. And there was literally no demand in the US for bananas. No one even knew what a banana was, right? Like there was like absolutely no demand. And what he's done, it took him years, right? Like he collaborated with like celebrities, influencers back in the time. He collaborated with Kellogg's to like help people to understand what even to use a banana for, right?
Yeah.
So he created out of the blue demand for fruit that no one ever wanted or thought they would want by just very good social and zeitgeist building, which like I think, it's hard to tell a VC, oh yeah, we're going to make this big, even though it is not big, right? Like that's hard to believe. But I feel like if you use the principles of, you know, human psychology, you can pretty much like get everything to blow up. And I do think toothpicks especially, like, I mean, they have been around for 200 million years. It's been the first tool that humans invented. So we were like, there must be something there also why it's still sticking around and not just for dental cleaning, right? People just pop it in their mouth because they have oral fixations. Yeah, like bite on their nails, on their pens and stuff. So like, I think that on top just gave us confidence we can do it.
Awesome. Although D2C is kind of a brutal game, right?
It is brutal.
Yeah. What's something behind the scenes that's you know, way harder than people think?
Well, coming from B2B, I think the hardest thing is like cash flow, right? Like you need to have the guts to spend a lot of money on your product before you even sell it, right? Like that's usually something you don't do in SaaS, right? Like you just test it in small scale, you get a cohort, it grows, and then you scale it with this cohort. Well, in D2C, you kind of just need to trust that like if you produce 100,000 toothpicks packages, that you will be able to sell it. And if you can't sell it, you are scratching immediately on the verge of the extinction. So luckily we haven't had this yet to this extent, but like it's always scary to like invest half a million in production, not knowing whether this is going to sell because you can't really, you can test it to an extent, but also consumers don't like to wait like month for a product and the hype dies. So that's, I think, is a bit scary. In general, cash flow, right? Like you need to negotiate with all the suppliers, like to payment terms, because every day where you don't have to pay something and you can get money in, that's worth a lot. So I think this is something that surprised me.
And Niklas, you're fighting plastic waste, right? Not just chewing habits. How big is that part of the mission for you?
I mean, like I am a strong, strong believer that if you have any impact built within your product, that you shouldn't make it the selling point. I think the biggest misconception around like anything sustainable is that you make that the selling point, right? Like I think, for example, Beyond Meat, what they've done, they've not said like, oh, we make a sustainable, green, vegan, plant-based alternative to meat. No, they said, we made like something that tastes exactly like meat, but with all the health benefits of plant-based protein. And then they also wanted it to list not at the vegan section of a supermarket. They were very, very clear about we want to be next to the meat because that's what we're competing with. So I think the goal is to, if you launch any social brand, is to really think of like what people care. And people, unfortunately, I mean, I would love to be different, care about us sending a toothpick into space more than about us like donating a bunch of money. But I think what you want to do if you like are driven by social and want to make a change, you try to get reach, you try to get your margins up, and then you bake into your business model some ways to give back and to contribute and to drive change with fun, right? Like I think there's a few oddly, I think, done the same, right? Like I choose oat milk, not because like there's no cow sufferings, but I just like the product more. I think that's the holy grail. I can't say yet that we have, you know, achieved massive impact with cutting chewing gum. Like I don't have the data of people. Like I get, you know, here and there feedback that people like start to do toothpicks instead of chewing gum. But right, like I don't want to, you know, like brag ourselves with like, oh yeah, we're doing so well for the planet, because we still have things to work out, right? Like we still have, unfortunately, plastic packaging because we couldn't afford in the beginning to go buy composable packaging. It just wasn't there yet. Like we couldn't afford it. It would have like absolutely threw over our margin and we couldn't grow that much. But I think what's important is that you have that on in mind, and whenever you can do it, you do it without making a big deal about it. I think that's how we think about like impact. And we're going to do more social stunts around like cool stuff as well. Like Beast Philanthropy, for example, like Mr. Beast, he has a philanthropy account which does 100 million views on average. And it's just fun and entertaining, but it does good. I think that's something we would like to do as well. We still want to be the cool, fun brand that doesn't take things too serious. At the same time, drive change. I think that's how we think about it.
I love it. I love this take. I love this approach. What do you want BKM to become in 10 years? Like a category, a movement, a pop culture icon?
So what I want BKM to be, I don't know, you probably had some sweets from your childhood. When you try them, you have this like nostalgia, right? Like this, like, oh my God, that brings me right back to when the world was still okay. I think if I, like we have a very young audience, Gen Z and Gen Alpha is like our core cohort. I want them, if they turn like, if they get kids one day and they pop a pleasing peach toothpick in their mouth, they're like, oh my God, yes. Back then when we still had fun watching TikToks about toothpicks going to space and stuff, that brings me back to time where the world was still okay. I think that's something that I will look back to and be like, yep, like this is really rewarding. And at the same time, yes, of course, like with all this like final goal, there need to be some, you know, cultural movements around it. We also would love to do some other products in the future. It's not always going to be toothpicks. Yeah, I think this is kind of like what gets me excited.
I love it. If someone listening wants to launch a product tomorrow, what's your one piece of advice they should absolutely follow?
Don't do the usual playbook. Like, it's just so crowded. Like, I don't think you can just like launch an ad campaign, and unless your product is entirely revolutionary and solves something that has not been solved before, which in D2C is very rare, then I think you got to really just reinvent the way that, like, literally go against what other people do. Like, I can recommend like building up a community, you know, through social. Like, I know everyone says this, but like, be authentic, just, you know, put it out there and see whether people like gonna like it. And also like be very flexible. Like, we never thought in the beginning that we would had like Gen Z and Gen Alpha as our like audience. So we were very flexible with our, like, we kind of let the audience drive a little bit of the perception as well. So we've kind of like secretly adapt a lot of our communications about our tone of voice. Of course, you start with an assumption, but then you want to like adapt it towards like what people really want to buy it for.
Yeah. I love it. I love this piece of advice. And Niklas, we are now at the part of the podcast where I usually play a game with my guests. Are you up for it? It's going to be kind of a rapid fire kind of questions. I'm just going to shoot questions at you. You're going to give me your quick answers.
Let's do it. Love that game.
Awesome. So what's a belief about brand building you think is totally overrated?
Influencer marketing to an extent. I don't think influencer marketing works the way it used to work, where you just like pay an influencer and they post a few stories like, oh, I just received this this product in my package. It changed my life. I don't think that's authentic, no matter how authentic the influencer is. Uh-huh. I think what you want to do is you want to build a story around the whole like influencer outreach. That's what we usually do, right? Like, our last collaboration with about like the UFC heavyweight champion, we just not like let him use our toothpick one day and like, oh yeah, this toothpick changed my life. So we built a whole storyline around like how we approached him, like how we went to his gym, and he started to like first be like skeptical around it, and then he started to like it, and then we developed the flavor with him, which was his favorite flavor. And I think that's what you need to do in influencer marketing. And the classic influencer marketing doesn't work. And I'm also not a big fan of user-generated content for all the D2C brands out there. I think it's kind of like, we've seen a lot of ads from user-generated content. You got to like figure out something else.
Nice. If you could steal one marketing move from any brand in the world, what would it be? Who are we copying?
Ooh, that's a really good question. One marketing move, like something I absolutely admire, I just love it in every aspect, is one of the early commercials from Dr. Squash. We can link it here. It was such a good, I think this is something that is more from Liquid Death. Like, Liquid Death wants every commercial to be so good, if it would be behind a paywall, you would still pay for it. I think this is the gold standard for how you want to do ads. It needs to be so entertaining and so like almost like comedian and funny, or like whatever you want to approach for, that people would almost pay to watch that commercial. And Dr. Squash had an ad on YouTube and on like TV that went so well. They had a customer acquisition cost of 50 cents, which is unheard of. But I watched this commercial multiple times. I thought it was super funny. I would have watched it without even a product being sold to me. If you get to this point, that's what something we are still working on, like a commercial that is so entertaining and so fun that you pay for the commercial alone. And then obviously like the product as well. I think that's the holy grail. And I would love to steal that from Dr. Squash. And I think Liquid Death has done a few bangers of these ones as well.
That sounds amazing. Actually, you know, like, have you seen anything of what Ryan Reynolds is doing with his brands? Like, Aviation Gene or Mint Mobile, or what else does he have there? You should check it out because this is exactly what you're talking about, I think. He's making it so relevant and so funny, and there's so much like kind of momentum to it. Like he's you know, he's giving it a social momentum. Like something happened with the Peloton that it was not working, and he took the Peloton girl to actually shoot an ad with her like the day or like within 24 hours from it and put it out there, and it's just going viral. It's amazing. You should check it out. Nicholas, if you had to assemble the ultimate dream team, like three people to fund a startup with, who's on the list and why?
I mean, I kind of found the dream team to assemble a team with. I feel like people say that often to this question. No, but honestly, like I work with my friends. Like I have the best, like I can't complain, right? Like I have the best life right now. I've worked with my friends all day long. Like we have a big marketing budget to do fun stuff, right? Like we've traveled the US last year for a month to chase Ryan Trahan, a big US YouTuber. Yeah. We saw the US, we filmed like videos, like we've interacted with people who love our product. Like that is the dream. So I think my team right now is very suited for that. I would pick it again. Yeah, I think honestly, like what I always think, you know, I'm in my 20s right now. Like everyone is always like, when I see older people, they're like, oh my God, back in my 20s, I would love to like take it back. So knowing that so many older people say like they like would love to be back in their 20s, I'm like, I got to make my 20s fun as well. So I'm not worrying too much yet about like money or like, you know, making the millions, because what do I do with my millions when I'm like old, burned out and, you know, tired. So I'm just trying to get the most out of like my work life blending as well. So I think that's the holy grail. It's just have a lots of fun, because the only scarce thing in life is time, right? So what is it if you know, gather the millions and then, you know, you only have a few years left to spend. Yeah. So I think that's the holy grail. So just find a team that you have lots of fun with, that loves it, that you can play paddle tennis afterwards as well, that you can also like catch up about other topics and stuff, and then it becomes really fun.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. Definitely, like guys, don't wait to live your life until you make your money. That can actually be pretty tricky. I think we also should play paddle sometime. Paddle is huge in Spain here. I don't know how big it is in Germany now.
It's popping up. Yeah,
nice.
I'm ready.
So whenever I'm in Germany, in Berlin, or whenever you come to Barcelona, I should play paddle together. Nicholas, what's the weirdest pitch or DM you've gotten since launching Peakum?
It's actually been like a few weeks ago. So we get a lot of requests from India. Like India is a country that wants our toothpick bad, but our price point is not there yet. So we can't, like we're selling for €3, which is fine for like the Western market. For India, it's a bit too expensive. So we got a DM of an Indian guy who was like, I trademarked Peakum. I've set up a Peakum store. He like AI generated all our stuff. And he was like, would you like to invest in my Peakum company?
No.
So that was a pretty weird DM. But yeah, it shows ambition, yeah.
Yeah, it does. I can imagine that India is like a perfect market for it. My wife is from India. I go to India like two or three times a year usually. Yeah, I can imagine that they would love it there, man. You should totally go out.
Yeah, we really want to. We just need to make it a bit cheaper so people in India can also enjoy it.
Yeah, 100%. What's your most used app when you're building the brand?
Ooh. Well, definitely TikTok. Uh-huh. So I think we like each of us who works on like the creative part logs like 3 hours, 4 hours a day on TikTok, which is sounds fun that you can reuse it as a work time. But we just like we've trained like multiple accounts, multiple algorithms on different verticals to see what's going on in the world, like what is currently trending. TikTok is such a fast paced environment, so we analyze a lot of like, how do people build hooks? How do they build up towards the climax? What words are they using? What music do they use? So we analyze a lot of other content creators' posts as well. So TikTok is definitely the number one that we use.
Yeah. Nice. Another one. What's something people underestimate about going viral?
So sorry, say that again.
What's something people underestimate about going viral?
What other people made to go viral? Sorry.
What they underestimate.
Like the first thing is that a viral TikTok is not a guaranteed sales driver. I think people assume if we reach like 16 million views, we must make millions of euros. The thing is, if you make your video like viral, like you usually don't sell really well, right? Like, because people don't like to be sold to. So what we're trying to do now, like we say at top of the funnel or organic content, is really just to be entertaining, to make a good piece, what I said earlier, like to almost like, you know, create something that people would pay for. And because of that, like the conversions of these like super viral TikToks, they're not great, right? They're 0.01%, which is fine, because if we would always like rely on those viral TikToks to sell our product, we had the most unreliable stock planning ever. It would absolutely break us. So it's good that like the top of the funnel is just awareness, impressions, and people love and get entertained. And then, you know, down further down the funnel, you can then make an ad that is more salesy and like gets people across the line to buy the product. And I think that's something people underestimate. They think like, yeah, if I make my one viral video, I'm going to be rich. I'm going to, I'm like, you know, everything is sorted, but that's not the case.
It's not true. All right. Niklas, if Beacon had a theme song, what would it be?
We actually have a theme song. I sent it to you.
Oh, you do have a Beacon.
We just AI generated one the other day. This is a good question. I don't know if you're allowed to blend this in, but if there's like if you can blend in a clip of the original Chiquita Banana jingle, I think that one is so catchy. Something along those lines, because it's like it was produced in the 1800s, so it's a very old commercial, but it's so bloody catchy and was played on like 300 times across the US on all radio channels. I can see why people like, you know, kind of had this in their heads. It's annoyingly funny and annoyingly catchy. I would love to have a jingle that is almost like as provocative and like funny and like sticky as this one. So maybe like blend this in right now.
I'm
gonna replace the banana with the toothpick.
Yeah. Awesome. Niklas, last one. Describe the rest of your life. I don't know if it's gonna be the hardest question or the easiest one. It depends. Some people say it's hard, some people say that is not that hard for them. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
Cool. Okay, so first word I'm choosing is definitely fun, right? Like, what is all life about if you don't have fun? That's the core of it. Connections, what's life about if you don't have great connections with people? I think that's another one that is just super important. Impact, something that, for example, we have set an oath for the longest time to is putting nicotine into toothpicks, right? Like I wouldn't be happy if I one day on my deathbed and I can see that a whole generation of Gen Alpha and Gen Z became nicotine addictive because we made it so like easy to like go to nicotine. If science like changed around nicotine, there's some like, you know, reasons why it's good, we might do that. But like right now, I feel horrible if I would do something just because it sells. Like, I think a good example is what is this big vape brand that absolutely blew up in the US and made hundreds of thousands of kids go vape all the time.
Yeah.
They probably made a shit ton of money and they're probably like are very well set for life, but I don't think I would be happy to die and know that I got a whole generation to smoke. Yeah. That's nothing I would like to back to. So that's my fourth. And then the fifth is just like meeting interesting people. So people, right? Like I think right now we have the privilege to speak to the most insane people, right? Like we work with a UFC heavyweight champion. They're all so like different breeds of people. And it's just so funny to like interesting and intriguing to get to know how they think about like take on their perceptive perceptions and stuff. So these are the five ones I would go for.
I love it. Niklas, so after answering this question, you're now fully known to the world. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I hope I'm going to see you soon in person, either in Berlin or in Barcelona. Hope you had fun as well. I think people will love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcin.